Kaita led them through the night under a moon only days from full. The tip of his staff clicked on the stony path, and his shadow flitted ahead of him like a monstrous black bat. The others had to stretch their legs to keep him in sight. After midnight, Mintaka began to fail. She was limping heavily and falling back steadily. Nefer shortened his stride to stay with her. He'd not expected this from her. Usually she was as strong as any boy he knew, and could outrun most of them. He murmured encouragement to her, not loud enough to reach the ears of Taita. He did not want the Magus to realize Mintaka's weakness and to shame her in the sight of the others. "It's not far now," he told her, and took her hand to lead her faster. "Bay will have the horses ready for us. We'll ride the rest of the way to Babylon in royal style." She laughed, but it was a strained, painful sound. It was only then that he realized something was wrong with her. "What is it that ails you?" he demanded. "Nothing," she said. "I've been locked up in the palace too long. My legs have gone soft." He would not accept it. He took her arm and forced her to sit on a rock beside the path, lifted one of her small feet and unlaced the strap of the sandal. He pulled it off and gasped, "Sweet Horus! How did you manage a single step on this?" The rough, ill-fitting sandal had galled her grievously. The blood was black and shining in the moonlight. He lifted the other foot and gently eased off its sandal. Slabs of skin and flesh peeled away with it. "I am sorry," she whispered. "But don't worry, I can go on barefoot." Furiously, he hurled the bloodied footwear out among the rocks. "You should have warned me about this earlier." He stood up, lifted her to her feet, turned his back to her, and braced himself to receive her weight. "Put your arms round my neck and jump up." Then he set off after the others, who by this time were merely a dark, moving shadow on the moonlit desert far ahead. Her mouth was close to his ear, and she whispered to him as he toiled on, trying to distract him and to encourage him. She told him how she'd missed him, and how, when she'd heard of his reputed death, she'd not wanted to live without him. "I wanted to die, so that I could be with you again." Then she told him about the priestess of Hathor, and how she had brought the serpent to her. Nefer was so appalled that he lowered her to the earth and scolded her angrily. "That was stupid!" In his agitation he shook her roughly. "Don't ever think like that again, whatever happens in the future."
"You cannot know how much I love you, my darling. You cannot imagine the devastation I felt when I thought you were gone."
"We must make a pact. We must live for each other from this day onwards. We must never think of death again until it comes to us uninvited. Swear it to me."
"I swear it to you. From now onwards, I will live only for you,"
she said, and kissed him to seal their bargain. He lifted her onto his shoulders again, and they went on. Her weight seemed to increase with every pace he took. Where the road was soft and sandy, he lowered her, and she leant upon him, hobbling along beside him on her raw and bleeding feet. When the ground became rough and stony, he lifted her again and trudged onwards. She told him of how Taita had overlooked her and saved her from her resolve to die.
"It was a most extraordinary feeling," she said, "as though he stood at my side and spoke to me in a strong, clear voice. He told me that you were still alive. How far away were you when he overlooked me?"
"We were at Jebel Nagara in the south, 15 days' travel from Avaris."
"He could reach so far?" she asked incredulously. "Is there no end to his powers?"
Once more they stopped to rest in the darkness, and she leant against his shoulder and whispered to him,
"There's something I want to tell you about my wedding night with Troc."
"No," he said vehemently. "I don't want to hear it. Do you think I've not tortured myself each day with the thought of it?"
"You must listen to me, my heart. I was never wife to him. Though he tried to force me, I was able to resist him. My love for you gave me the strength to deny him. I've heard that he displayed the red-stained sheepskin on the palace walls. The words were painful to him, and he turned away his face. Yes, it was my blood, she said, and he tried to pull away from her embrace, but she held him. It was not my virgin blood. It was the blood from my nose and mouth where he'd beaten me to force me to submit. I swear to you on the love I have for the goddess, and on my hope to bear your sons, that I am a virgin still, and will be until you accept my maidenhood from me, as a proof of my love. He took her in his arms, and kissed her, and wept with relief and joy, and she wept with him. After a time he stood up again and lifted her onto his back. It was as though her vow had given him new strength, and they went on more strongly. It was after midnight before the others realized that something had befallen them and came back to search for them. Taita bound up Mintaka's feet, and after that Hilto and Merin took their turns at carrying her. They went on faster, but the stars were fading and the dawn light growing stronger when they finally reached the oasis, where Bay waited for them with the horses. All of them were exhausted by that time, but Taita would not allow them to rest. They watered the horses for the last time and refilled the water skins until they were tight and shiny, with drops of moisture oozing from them. While they were doing this, Taita half filled a bucket with water from the well, and using some foaming unguent, washed the dye from his hair until once more it shone silver. "Why does he wash his hair at a time like this?" Merin wondered. "Perhaps it restores some of his force that he lost when he dyed it," Mintaka suggested it, and no one questioned this. When they were ready to leave, Taita forced them to drink again from the well, to fill their bellies with all the water they could swallow without vomiting. While they were doing so, Taita spoke quietly to Bay. "Can you feel it?" Bay scowled and nodded. "It is in the air, and I can feel it reverberating through the soles of my feet. They are coming." Despite the urgency of the moment and the menace of an enemy close at hand, Taita took one last opportunity to treat Mintaka's feet. He smeared the raw and bruised places with salve and rebandaged them. Then at last he ordered them to mount. Taita took Merin in the leading chariot as his lance-bearer. Nefer followed with Mintaka clinging to the dashboard to take the weight off her feet. Hilto and Bay brought up the rearguard in the last chariot. The Assyrian merchant who'd sold them the carpets was supervising his servants and slaves as they loaded up his wagons and draft animals. He turned to watch them as they passed, and he called out a farewell to Taita. But his interest quickened as he saw the girl in the second chariot. Not even her dusty clothing and dishevelled hair could hide her striking looks. He was still staring after them as they topped the last rise and disappeared into the wilderness, heading east along the caravan road that would eventually lead to the shores of the Red Sea.